Hi everyone, welcome to Training with Casey, where we explore animal training and living our best lives with animals. I'm Joseph Laughlin, producer of this podcast, and now, here's your host, Casey Covert. Let's get started.
Hey, thank you for the introduction, Joseph. It's Casey Covert, your host on Training with Casey, and my friend and colleague, Denny Simard, is here with us today. Hi, Denny.
Aloha.
You're always rubbing in that fact that you live in Hawaii. Now, when we talked last time, we were starting to talk about collection and the fact that you started out using classical training in dressage to teach horses to do dressage, and that you evolved to use sats, which is not part of the classical horse training. And we had just gotten started and you tempted us, you taunted us by saying that when the animal did the step overs and the lateral exercises, this was really important. And so we agreed to keep going today. So I think it would be great if we could cover, what exactly is collection? And, you know, how do you approach creating collection? And why does everybody need to know about it, whether they think they do or not?
A few things. The horse needs to be elastic, not just in the hooves or the knees, but also in their sides. And these lower level lateral movements really help develop those sides, which will, just give the horse a lot more elasticity, strength, everything that they need. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about these lateral movements is that, A, you get that muscular development, but also in order to perform them properly, the horse has to have a lighter, quote unquote, lighter front end than the back end. You're not going to do a shoulder in if the horse's nose is in the dirt. It's just not going to happen. And the ability to have that flexibility in the horse to cross their legs without tripping, things like that. And so need to have this magical thing called collection. Okay. Now, to a large degree, the horse will do it by themselves. With sats, yes, we can tell the horse what the chin tuck is. And if you feel my left leg and this part of your side, I want the rear to go this way, which in itself is sort of interesting. I don't want to get too far afield on this, but in sats, we're often having the animal move into us
rather than away.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when I talk about having leg cues with sats that look like classical riding aids, most of the time are asking the horse to move away.
Yes. Denis, let's just take just a moment to really focus on this, because I'm not a classically trained equestrian, but I have studied aspects of it. It appears to me that in classic equestrianism, the rider puts pressure on a horse to get it to move away from the pressure and into some goal behavior. So the animal is actually avoiding the aids in general and then landing in some other place. You're adding a layer of complication that actually makes everything easier, because you're recognizing that you still have to have the appearance of using the same aids, but you're creating the behavior by communicating to the animal what it is you're trying to accomplish and doing that by showing them what to move to instead of away. And then you put them on a cue that looks like the traditional cue. Is that accurate?
That's pretty accurate, yes.
I think you're going to blow the minds of people that have been, I mean, it's a lot of effort for a rider to sit atop one of those huge horses and keep their own seat constantly and also all the aids. I mean, that just seems like a really tiring day to me.
Well, but with SATs, reach and target in particular, it's really quite a bit easier.
So in other words, you literally find it easier having ridden both ways.
Yes.
Okay.
Now there's a lot that leads up to that.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean with that is that I teach almost all of this stuff to the horse on the ground first.
Yeah.
And I get them used to that notion of moving away from a leg cue. I put my hand on their side, right where that leg's supposed to go. And then we do the SAT stuff to make them move. I'll put a target on the other side. But that feeling of my hand on their leg is always there, and it's associated with the whole movement.
So you make the cue from the classical aid. It's going to look the same way.
Yes.
But it's not created because you push the horse someplace. It's created because the horse understands that when you put something in that position, it means that they go toward
yes.
something else. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now,
that's
there's a whole there's a whole set of things that we haven't talked about at all, which is the rein aids.
Okay, but let's not go there yet,
because okay.
we've got a lot of places to go on this subject, but we haven't yet defined what is collection. How does a person that's classically trained think about collection?
Well, they tend to think about it as a weight shift to the rear. And as you were pointing out, we know from biomechanics that isn't exactly what happens. If you think of the horse at rest as a horizontal line, and in collection, we want to tilt that line.
As in your left hand is the front end of the horse?
And yes.
So show it again. Which one is rises?
The left.
Okay, so that's
the front
end. Yeah, well, your horse head is a little bit confusing, okay? Just wanted to clarify that. Okay, so I'm checking off on my list. So there's the idea of lifting the front end, and that is to encourage a specific power source. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
So keep going, because you've got seven things here that we're going to talk to people about as far as what collection is.
Okay. Let's see. I just mentioned the imaginary line. Impulsion from behind.
Okay.
We always want that. The head carriage.
Okay, and what should that head carriage be?
Well, the classical way of looking at that is the pole, horse's pole, is the highest point, and their face perpendicular to the ground.
Okay. So I've heard people say behind the vertical, is that where the chin actually deviates from being vertical and it's
there.
Close? Yeah.
They're walking around like this.
You do that very well.
Thank you. I've practiced it for years. So, yeah. And I see that a lot. Even at FEI levels, so
you know what? If we cannot communicate the limits of a behavior, we set animals and people up for cognitive dissonance. Like if you're encouraging them to have this, you know, tuck to their head, like maybe they'd normally be out like this, and you're doing this, this, this. If you don't clearly communicate where the limit is, this far but no further, they will keep trying to be better. If they're motivated to cooperate, they will make it more and more extreme on their own. So that's a really important place to have that communication, because the very horses that are trying best to be correct maybe the ones that are overdoing it to everybody's detriment simply because they don't know for sure when it's enough.
What the limit is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Classically, okay. In a classical context, we talk about moving the horse into the bit.
Okay.
I know you want to take up rein aids at another time.
I don't care, but you just don't have them on your outline.
True. This is why, one of the reasons why I really like loose ring bits. The signals that I send through the reins are done by jangling that one or both of those rings rather than holding the horse like this, driving them forward. No.
Driving them forward into the bit, keeping contact with the bit.
Yeah.
If the horse really knows on its own what the position should be, then you getting in there with further directions just kind of muddies the water.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, pick that up. I'm picking it up. Well, pick it up, pick it up. Pick. I am picking it up. Pick it up, pick it up. Dang it. You know, it's like, if the communication has effectively occurred, so the animal understands what the goal is, maybe it's time to get out of their way and let them do it.
Yes. And I don't know if I've said this enough, but when doing the lateral movements, when it's done correctly, and I'm not talking about FEI, I'm talking about introductory class, very bottom class you can go in. Of course, you wouldn't be doing a shoulder in that class. That doesn't happen till I think it's level one. But it may not be picture perfect when you're starting out with this. It doesn't have to be. In order to cross their feet properly, they've got to lighten that front end in order to cross correctly. And so to a certain degree, you're getting collection already just by performing these simple movements.
Yeah, like by definition, they couldn't happen if you didn't have collection.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. That's a very useful, simple way to start. Like if you're just doing those exercises, you're going to be developing your horse's ability to do that.
Yes. And they'll, like you were saying earlier, they'll learn to do it on their own.
Yeah. Affair does it on her own.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we have impulsion from behind, head carriage, slightly lowered hindquarters. You already talked about the slightly raised withers or front end, slightly lowered hindquarters.
And that's the kind of the classic way of looking at it. But as we were saying, what it's really about is unweighting the front more than physically shifting weight backwards.
So you want flexibility on the front, and on the back, you're wanting engagement underneath the horse. Is that another form of flexibility, or is it more power related, or?
Yes to both of those.
Okay.
Flexible and power.
How do you know that you're getting that? We know that we're getting it on the front end if the horse can do these lateral movements. What tells us that we are getting that on the hindquarters?
Well, to a certain degree, the same thing applies. If the horse is stepping well underneath themselves, I'm talking about the hind legs now, you have it. It's when the legs are dragging out behind that you're not getting any forward thrust to speak of.
Okay. And I know how I have worked on communicating that concept to horses. How do you do it classically?
Well, either driving them forward with the legs or your seat. The seat is an important thing.
So
that's what I was getting at later in the list about rider involvement.
Okay, so do you want to like table that consideration till we get there?
No, this is fine. It's the next point anyway.
Okay.
You know, you really need to push with your seat, if that makes any sense.
Well, it does, but I'm not knowledgeable enough. So for me, if I push with my seat, I am tilting my pelvis to stop my horse. What would the cue with my seat be to cause my horse to drive into something?
touching both sides at the same time.
With seat bones or with thighs or both?
I prefer calves.
Calves.
Mm-hmm.
That's
I'm not big
from the seat.
I'm sorry, what?
That's a long way from the seat.
Oh, I was just referring to the to the leg cues.
Okay, so everything from the waist down, you kind of classify as being a seat cue?
Yes.
Okay, well,
I mean, it's literal. If you watch, it's really easy to see with the big boys and girls. When they're doing a sit trot, for example, they are pushing their pelvis forward with every stride.
So almost like posting, but sitting right in the saddle.
Yeah, staying glued there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because like I'm an educated person, so I hope I'm not dragging your other listeners down that know more about dressage and so on. So, for example, I just looked at what I wanted my horse to do, and I saw what the cues were, and I did my best to apply them similar to you. I taught the concepts when I was on the ground. Then I got on the horse and taught the cues with me on her back, which was just kind of a transfer process. Like, this cue is not how we created this, but this is going to be the signal for this, because if anything happened to me and she ended up with somebody else, I didn't want her being confused about what these other people wanted. What I found is the horse became so willing and light that my cues became imperceptible to an outside observer.
Yeah.
So if I wanted to turn her left or right, I did simply look in that direction. As I looked in that direction, I would rotate my torso just a few degrees. And she would aptly pick that up, and that's where we would go. If I wanted to stop, it was just a question of dipping the pelvis. If I wanted to go, what I did is lift the thighs off the side of the horse. And she just flowed forward right into it. It was so responsive. Later on, we determined that we would have to desensitize her, because the level of, like, I had to be very, very quiet in the saddle because she was listening to everything.
Yes.
And if you put a person up there that was slouching, talking on their phone, looking over here, all this stuff, the horse would be going nuts.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing up there? Can you please get yourself in order? So, yeah. So you're talking about a much more disciplined, extensive idea of cueing. So is there more that you want to tell us about the big picture of dressage from a biomechanical perspective? I'll just review. We did impulsion from behind, head carriage, slightly lowered hindquarters, slightly raised withers, a spring in the step.
Well, that goes along with the lowered hindquarters and what I was saying about stepping well underneath themselves in the back. That's the spring that we're looking for.
Okay.
It's really when you get to the higher levels, like FEI, and you're doing a PEOF, they're looking for and need the hind legs to be going up and down with a nice spring in the step.
Okay, so I am restating it here because basically, let's look at all the things that are front end. We've got the lateral movement. Okay, we've got the front raised. Then we have the head carriage, lateral movement, and possibly extending. That would be the front end, right?
Yes.
And then with the hindquarters, they're slightly lowered, and we get the impulsion from behind.
Yes.
And a spring in the step. And not listed here, but what we also get is also flexibility.
Yes.
So even though on the front end, the flexibility is more likely to be from side to side, and then the rear end, it's more likely to be forward, they still have the flexibility to reach under. And I think that that's the extension on the hind end. You know, like if you're getting extension in the front end, that's that horse rotating its reach to getting a greater reach. In the hips, it's the horse reaching underneath.
Yes.
So we get extension on both ends, but it's directed a little differently. And then that leads us to the rider involvement. And what would you like to say about that?
Well, that goes back to giving the seat and leg aids. Also, the rider needs to remain very balanced.
Yeah.
Can't be.
And quiet.
Yes.
Like they can't be, they shouldn't be a distraction or a disturbance to the movement. Is that what we're saying?
Yes. And encouraging it at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's automatically a more skilled rider.
Yes.
Because we go through these phases in our riding where we're trying to stay on the horse.
Yeah. Well, I did that when I was 8. So.
Yeah, I remember one time.
Believe me, I came off quite a few times before I learned how to stay upright.
Before we perfected it. I brought a bunch of kids in junior high home with me at lunchtime, and my horse was out in the front yard grazing, and they'll go, "Wow, how do you ride your horse?" And I'm feeling very cocky, and I go, "I just jump on her like this, and I just kind of hop onto her back," and she's eating, and she gives that little shrug like, "Casey, really?" And then they go, "Well, how would you do this?" And I got really cocky and I said, "Like this," and I swung my leg over. And so now I'm sitting backwards on her. And she thought that was enough shenanigans and she started crow hopping around the yard. And yeah, I took on the astronaut persona.
This was not a Gymkhana horse.
Yeah, no, or at least I wasn't a Gymkhana look-alike, right, or act-alike. So
well,
basically,
there's an exercise that I like to do, and this is learning about your seat. You kind of touched on it a little bit a minute ago. I like to do figure eights, not even touching the reins, and just doing it by with my pelvis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've examined this or analyzed this to a certain extent. You can't really help it. You've got your legs on both sides of the animal, and you rotate your hips. Another thing that happens is that you are inherently putting pressure onto the saddle with your thigh, right down to your knee, and you can't really stop that from happening. And the horse can feel that through the saddle.
Absolutely.
And it's sort of opposite of what I've been saying about cues, because there's this pressure that's happening in the thigh and oftentimes all the way down to the knee. So they are getting a cue that way. The reason I like to do that is not to show off that I don't need reins, but you need mobility forward, back, left, and right with your pelvis also.
Yeah. And you need to be aware of it. You know, to speak intentionally through your own aids in your own seat, you have to be very discerning about what is emitting from you.
Yeah.
Like as a dance major, we spent a lot of time, a surprising amount of time, walking across the floor on our seat bones. So, okay, I can see I've flummoxed you. Allow me to explain. So when you sit correctly, you have your tailbone, and then you have the two places where your hips join your pelvis.
Yeah.
And that makes a triangle. And you need to learn to sit balanced on those three pivot points. So once you're balanced on that, then you have to work on increasing your strength. And so they would start us on one end of a hall, and we would have to move ourselves across the entire hall by scooting like this on our seat bones. Okay, yeah, it was hysterical, but still. And then, you know,
it gets the picture in my mind that I'm laughing at.
Yeah, like reinforcement on your leotards that you normally don't find in the stores. So this is something that then in going into riding horses from that perspective, that it really influenced everything that I did. And as a matter of fact, I saw all these people in the equestrian club that were having all these issues. And the issues were mainly really around them sitting on their seat bone and holding their stomach in to support their lower back.
Yeah.
And this is something that really jumped out at me from my dance training. So I made an agreement to ask the dance chair to come over and coach all these people. And it was pretty astonishing, because all these people that had spent years and years and years of effort to develop themselves as riders were going, oh my God, he did more for me in 5 minutes than, because he empowered them to identify the critical things and to monitor themselves, which is what you're
sure.
doing for people when you say, if you want to know if you're getting collection, if you can move, do lateral movements, you're getting there.
Yes.
That is a simple guidestone that can help us go in the right direction.
Yes.
So then you were saying rider involvement, and classically it is to create a box to kind of like drive an animal into a position. But with SATs, we use other tools to create mental understanding and mental clarity. And then we go back and create cues for those things that classically are, you know, gotten a different way.
Yeah.
So we make it look like it was done classically, but in reality, it was done in a whole different way, but nobody knows any differently.
Right.
Yeah, we're sneaky little rascals. And what you're telling us is that that's an easier ride. It's easier to be successful. It's less physically demanding. What else?
I don't think I can take that any further.
Yeah, it's kind of simple and to the point, isn't it?
Yeah. And you can get a responsiveness. You know, a lot of horses will resist being manipulated around. And
like they'd be willing or able to do those movements, but you kind of confounded the issue because you start pushing them around and they're like, what? Why are you pushing me?
Yeah.
You have taken some very difficult horses into very successful performance and done it in a fraction of the time that would be normally expected.
Yes.
And one of the things that strikes me, you know how the government taught the astronauts, they came up with a program to keep astronauts stronger in space, and it was isometrics.
Mm-hmm.
And in isometrics, you provide your own resistance.
Sure.
To strengthen, to create strength where there is no gravity to fight against. And with riding, it's different, but it's always struck me that it's a form of isometrics. That somebody is on this horse and creates a rigid box that horse kind of, you know, has to stay within. And that right there is a lot of effort. It's a lot of stress, and it's a lot of, gosh, I don't want to be extreme about describing this, but maybe submission from the horse. Like, if you just say to a horse, can you just walk this way? Oh, that's outstanding. That's outstanding. That's different than saying, can you walk this way without ever creating any resistance to my aids? Like every time there's an actual pressure from an aid that indicates a mistake. Like the horse needs to be moving away from that. So here's where I have a new insight on this. Dave got a new car, new to us at least, and it has one of those lane detector things in it.
Yeah.
I'm loving it. I am loving it because we live way out in the country. It turns out Dave drives all over the road. Now that's okay because these roads, like, you know, they're pockmarked on the sides. But I can sit there meditating, minding my own business, except I'm not. And it'll go ding, ding, ding. And I'll go, oh, are you having trouble staying in the lane? And then we'll go a little further. Oh, I see you cross the lane again. Because he's getting that feedback. I don't know why, but it's irritating him. And this is what is coming into my mind as we talk about this, that when you create a frame for a horse, every time he hits the frame, it's kind of an error. Now, do you think I'm overstating that? Maybe that's just too extreme.
No, I don't think you're overstating it. Certainly in the classical sense, if they vary, they're going to run into your leg. And they go, oh, well, I'm going to go over here now.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I'm saying, because when people say make sure you've got contact with the bit, there's a certain amount of contact that's actually encouraged, right?
Yes.
So the horse has to be very alert to when it's a smidgen too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very refined distinction that would be easy to lose in the heat of the moment. Like, everybody has to be so quiet. And it's so quiet in their actions, so quiet in their seat, so quiet even in the environment where there's no huge distractions going on, where the horse simply cannot put the focus on this very
subtle
distinction.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really surprised me is that what is the age of retirement for horses in dressage on average?
Oh, I'm not sure that I know. 15, 16, something like that.
Yeah, that seems very young to me.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about, the physical conditioning that occurs for collection to happen, that's pretty basic to all movement. We're not talking about, well, Mikhail Baryshnikov would have that, which he does or did, but normal people wouldn't. No, everybody walks. All humans would benefit from understanding about collection and making sure that they have it and employ it. And that's what you're telling us about dressage and all horse endeavors. That while you can see highly developed examples, everybody needs to be aware and setting their sights on developing generally basic levels of collection that facilitate all aspects of safe movement.
Yes, indeed.
What was, at that point where you were coming from a classical background, and now you're doing this thing that's kind of juxtaposed, was there a point where you kind of caught fire, where it was like, oh my God, this isn't just we can do it this way, we need to be doing it this way?
I wouldn't say that there was a single point. It was progressive. I had developed this program with Holiday, and then I got Private Pilot, and then Jet, and everybody else who came along after that. So it was more of a development, but well, actually, yes, I'm going to take that back. There was a single point where I went, oh my God. And that was our very first dressage show. Mm-hmm. When, I'd been doing this with Holiday, and my coach saw it, but she wasn't letting on that she was seeing this great performance. She just said, go to the show, just try it. You don't have to take it up as a career. Well, we did, because we took first place at this show. Yeah. So that was definitely an aha moment.
Yeah, especially like with Holiday, it wasn't just a matter of him learning this stuff. It was a matter of him signing on. To where you were no longer spending energy to protect your life and to talk him into doing it, but rather you gave him his job and then let him shine, and he wanted to shine.
Yep.
I love it.
And
when
he did.
He did. He absolutely did. And I'm going to step in here because, as we may have told people before, the way I came into the picture is I was going to give a seminar at a barn, and Denis was doing something with Holiday. So I assumed he was there for my seminar. Why wouldn't he be, right? And it turns out he had no clue. He wasn't coming to my seminar. His girlfriend was coming. Her horse wasn't out. And I asked Denis, do you mind if we use your horse as a demo horse? And I'll never forget the slightly speculative look of your face, your slightly raised eyebrows, like, well, that could be interesting.
I didn't know if he was going to comply or kill you.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for letting me know. It could be an issue. So you bring him in, and you're just standing at his head, and I just start communicating ideas to him. Like, these are your body parts, and, you know, these are the bridges and the targets, and, you know, can you turn this way? Can you turn that way? Da, da, da. It was never do this. It was never do this. It was, can you? Are you willing to? Have I effectively communicated? I only saw a really smart horse that was on top of everything. I had no suspicion that this horse was difficult in any way at all, much less possibly a hazard to anybody that got on his back. And so I was really surprised to learn. And this is something that I think is so worth noting about SATs. Because we don't come in and say, do this. Because we say, are you willing to do this? Have I communicated it clearly? We free the animal to just do it with us and for us without giving up any personal power. He doesn't have to submit to us. He just is communicating with us. Yes, I'm capable of doing that. I didn't say I would do it for you, but I can do it. Oh, okay, great. Well, are you willing to do it? And this is so important when you're working with exotic animals, because you really cannot make them do anything.
Right.
And I think people have a false sense of security with horses where they think they can make them do something, but then the horse runs them into a wall. Mm-hmm. Or falls on them or something like that. And I was like, well, I guess you got found out, didn't you? You know, it's like, we do not have the power to make anybody else do anything without risking ourselves.
True.
So the whole thing was such an education for me to find out this is really smart, cooperative horse have been so misunderstood by so many.
Yeah.
That was a great horse.
Till he found me. Yeah. Well, us.
Well, you had to be willing to do it, because here's the thing. You know, I have this little manual, and I give this little seminar, and I show the mechanics of how to do it. And there were all these other people there, and you are the one person that actually did the scientific thing. The scientific thing is test it.
Yeah.
Don't go out and say, well, this is not the way we do it. Go out and say, can it be done this way? So you did that, and you made a whole dressage career out of it.
Yes, I did. And this is one of the problems that I encounter. Is that you just said it. All of these other people were like, no, we don't do it that way. And nobody used it.
Yeah.
Even my own girlfriend thought it was a bunch of bunk.
Even your old girlfriend who's seeing the new results you're getting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like she just heard about it and she thinks it's stupid and you think it's good. She heard about it at the same time, and then she sees what you accomplish using it. That I've seen that exact thing happen before. Like one pair of a couple gets it and the other one doesn't. It can create relationship issues.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it's so exciting, Denise. Yeah, this whole thing of collection and how important it is, but how accessible it is for everyone using simple exercises, but also using communication instead of physical pressure, physical constriction,
manipulation.
Yeah. And all around us, you know, tools that are considered extreme, like the roll curve. And I don't even know very much about this. I just see that I'm reading that there's controversy over allowing this tool, that it is cruel, etc. And yet I know that, for example, as discerning as my horse Sarah was when I sat upon her back, that it wouldn't really matter if I had a really extreme bit on her, because the amount of change that would come through that bit would be so small, it would be like there almost wasn't a bit on her. Which is what you're saying when you say I'm cueing with the jingles rather than with the reins. And so I think people can be very misled when they focus on, oh my gosh, that has a sharp point or whatever, because that doesn't mean that that's what the horse is experiencing.
True.
And yet you're always going to have these people that don't have discernment, that don't have their own development as equestrians, so that any way they apply it is going to be severe and not necessary.
Yeah.
So
true enough.
Okay. Well, do we have more to talk about on this? We have a podcast coming up.
Not on this subject. I don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. It was very interesting, and I'm looking forward to learning more with you and from you. Denise going to be coming to Southeast Virginia. When is that going to be?
I arrive on the 21st.
And you'll be doing clinics and classes and lessons?
Yes.
And how can people connect with that?
Well, the easiest way would be to call me. Can I advertise the number?
You can, just so long as, I mean, you're putting your phone number out there in public, just know that. Yeah, go for
well,
it if you want to.
It's going to be either phone or email, either way.
So go for it.
All right. You can call or text me at 530-277-3286. If you prefer email, it's kgfht5120@kingofgamesfarm.com.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to
Get you signed up and we'll go.
Started. I mean, really, if people attend and learn from you in one session, they can be well on their way to getting all this done.
Yeah.
Just a whole new thing. I mean, that's
absolutely
how you and I got started together. All right. Thank you, Denise. It was a pleasure. And I think we do have more podcasts coming, but we'll talk about that.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Hey fans, are you enjoying Training with Casey? Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. Also, don't forget to subscribe to Casey Covert on YouTube. That is youtube.com/C/Casey Covert. Also, give the podcast a like, share, and comment.
Thanks for joining us. Come back for more news and views on animal training and living with animals. Stay at the top of the pack with Casey. This is Joseph Laughlin, producer of Training with Casey. See you next time.